This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and your number is 877-217-5757. 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're 15 days away from the finish line of November 5th, and the presidential election is considered to be really close. Now, the seven swing states are the ones that will determine who wins. Louisiana is considered to be in the bank for Donald John Trump, and why not? Because he's won here twice by convincing margins. And in the last four elections, which include John McCain, Mitt Romney, and Donald Trump as a Republican nominee, all 64 parishes have voted exactly the same way as far as who carries those parishes. So Louisiana is considered to be a given, but Jim Kitchens, the esteemed pollster from Florida, who's polling every day and polling more people than anybody else, has Trump ahead by only 4 points in Louisiana right now. Now, Kitchens also has Kamala Harris ahead in the swing states. The ones I checked this morning, she's ahead in Georgia, she's ahead in North Carolina, she's ahead in Pennsylvania. But his polls are outliers. Most of the polls right now have Trump slightly ahead, within the margin of error, slightly ahead. And because of that, Donald Trump remains the betting favorite in Las Vegas. And we're going to bring in Dan Moldea to survey what's going on in our world. And it is a fascinating world we're in. And to show how things have changed, I've been around a while, and I recall on this date, October 21st, 1988, 11 days before the election, Louisiana was considered to be a swing state. At that time, we were voting for the winner, Democrat or Republican, in every election. Michael Dukakis came to the University of New Orleans. I remember he had John Breaux, the senator, beside him, along with Albert Brooks, the comedian. He thought Louisiana was in play. And Louisiana, as we know, went for George H.W. Bush, as did 39 other states. And Dukakis, who had actually had a lead after the Democratic convention, he lost convincingly, albeit by 7 million votes, the same amount of votes that Joe Biden beat Donald Trump by in 2020. But right now, Harris is about where Trump was in 2016. She's behind, but within striking distance, and those who are for her remain confident that she will win, and it seems every day is an adventure with Donald Trump, who is making statements that are quite bizarre, and we'll get to some of those. But Dan Moldea, who called it on July 1st, saying Joe Biden's got to get out and Kamala Harris has to be the choice. He is with us, and he is reporting from the Beltway, which is the most Democratic city in America when it comes to voting. Good morning, Dan Moldea.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm kind of stunned by that poll about the 4% in Louisiana. That's kind of shocking.
Well, I think it'll be closer than it has been, but it was 18 points last time. So let's see what happens. I suspect it'll be closer than that, but I doubt that it'll be 4 points. But Kitchens is showing, for example, in Florida, where he lives and knows that state is better than anybody else. Florida, as we know, used to be a swing state, but now is considered Trump territory, and he is on the record, at least for now, a Floridian. In Florida, she is ahead 50-47 in his poll.
Wow.
So that's, I think he's going to carry Florida, but it shows you that this is a fluid election, and you would have thought by now that most people would have their minds made up, but it comes down to turnout, of course, and who gets their votes out, and we will see. But the Vegas odds, and these people, they may be partisan, but ultimately, they're in it for the money. They've got Trump as the favorite, Dan. How do you explain that?
I can only explain what I think. And what I think is that a country, a voting public, that elected Barack Obama and then re-elected Barack Obama is not going to turn the keys to the car over to Donald Trump, who wrapped that car around a telephone pole the last time he drove it. I just don't see any way that Trump, who's never gotten over 47% either in 2016 or 2020, is going to match 47%. I think he's going to go, his national poll will be down. I think best at best 43%. I think we're looking at a 54-43 Kamala victory in the national vote, and I think she's going to get over 300 electoral votes. That's my prediction based on what I hoped is going to happen. But it's also based on the fact that I just don't see how Trump gets rewarded for his bad behavior since the 2020 election. And it has been awful, you know. And I think that the January 6th Capitol insurrection is a major issue here for most people, that they don't want to see a president lose an election, refuse to admit that he lost the election, and then try to overthrow the electoral process in retaliation. I just see this as I just don't see Trump being rewarded for this. I think he's toast. I think he's going to be repudiated, and I can hardly wait for him to get this comeuppance that he's so richly deserved.
Well, there you go. You want it to happen, and you're almost willing it through the phone lines.
I'm willing it through the phone lines. Yes, I'm a journalist, as you know, who takes sides, and I have taken sides on this.
Well, I love you, Dan, but I don't think Trump's going to lose by 11 points. But if he does, it'll be a story. And it could happen. He could also win by 2 or 3 points. But chances are, and even the odds makers in Vegas who have Trump as a favorite right now, they're conceding that she will win the overall vote. And Trump will win.
Jim, when's the last time a Republican candidate for president won the national popular vote? What was it?
20 years ago. 2004? 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, with John Kerry, with George Bush and John
That's
Kerry.
Correct.
That's the last time. Yeah.
And the irony is that Kerry almost won that election despite losing the overall vote by 3 million. He lost by 100,000 in Ohio. And 100,000 votes in Ohio is about a half of a percent.
If
Ohio had gone for Kerry, he would have been the president of the United States. And that's I think, the only way we're going to correct this awful electoral college if the Republicans get nailed once. And right now it's the Democrats. They've won 7 of the last 8 votes of the people.
Right.
The only election in America where you can get fewer votes than the other person and win the election is the presidency, for heaven's sakes. They've won 7 of 8, but are only 5-3, and that has affected the composition.
And you, of course, are including Gore v. Bush.
I am.
In 2000, right? Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes. But that's affected the composition of the Supreme Court because justices come and go, and if it had been 7 out of 8, Democrats would have control of the court, and think of how the world would be a different place.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Jim, completely. The world would be a completely and totally different place right now, absolutely, right.
Well, if Harris wins, and right now I'd say there's a 55% chance she'll win. If she wins, it'll be because of the Dobbs decision by the Supreme Court, because there is a huge gender gap, huge. And women are not happy about this at all, Dan.
I agree. This is the women coming out to vote is key on this. And it has to be the outrage among women where white guys are trying to tell them what to do with their bodies and what to do with their health care. And some of the horror stories that have been coming out about women who needed that kind of health care and were unable to get it, and that their doctors were at risk of being imprisoned if they did provide that kind of health care. I think there's enough outrage out there that is going to be, as you say, that's going to be the major issue, and I think that's going to bring everything along. I think the democracy issue is going to be a lot, too, and I think that Trump's gone so far over the top on his indiscretions during his speeches, and you can go into whatever detail you want about that.
Yeah, well, when Robin's at the ready, Robin reminded me of this first thing this morning. Here was Donald Trump yesterday. By the way, Arnold Palmer is the most popular athlete in American history. I went to the Alley Center several times in Louisville.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
I love the place. And right next door, there was an exhibit of Leroy Neiman's art, and one side was Arnold Palmer, and the other side was Muhammad Ali. And I said, who's selling better? And this is in Muhammad's hometown. I said, Arnold Palmer is. People loved that guy because he represented something that went beyond golf. And he won 62 times on the PGA Tour, and people may not know it, but he won twice in Baton Rouge. There was a Baton Rouge Open that was on the tour. 1960, he won at the Country Club of, Baton Rouge Country Club. Got a $2,000 to win the tournament, $2,000. 2 years later, he won at the Sherwood Forest Country Club and got $2,800. So two of his 62 wins were in Baton Rouge. But he's from Latrobe, Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump was yesterday. And let's go to Trump making, well, let's hear it.
I love Latrobe. You know why? The home of Arnold Palmer. This is the home of my friend Arnold Palmer. And he loved Latrobe. You know, he turned out to be one of the greatest golfers in the world. But Arnold Palmer was all man. And I say that in all due respect to women, and I love women. But this guy, this is a guy that was all man. This man was strong and tough.
And we'll go to a break after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow at the ready for your call, and we'll go to the phone lines in just a moment at 877-217-5757 with Dan Moldea. And Donald Trump, a good thing we went to the break. He started talking about Arnold Palmer's body, and and he's gotten some pushback. But in last week's New York Times, there was an editorial from Charles Blow, who went to Grambling, now lives in Atlanta. He said that if Trump wins, it's because of the, quote, feminization of the Democratic Party. And Trump says these macho things. And there's a gender gap, as a listener noted during the break, that favors Trump among men. Some men in particular, really, they really like this kind of stuff, Dan.
Yeah, I would imagine that the macho vote is out there, but at the same time, I think that people have to remember how badly this guy did during his first term. The fact that he defames at will, he never admits guilt, he only cares about himself, and he is just a shameless liar and an accomplished conspiracy theorist who has, as I wrote in my column yesterday, who has created an alternative universe and a paranoid's paradise. You know, right, my next column is going to be about whether we can make peace with our families and family members and friends as a result of all of this. And, you know, that's very much up in the air. I mean, people have really, I think as you pointed out earlier, people have really taken a position and they are holding to it. And it has become a life's choice. And it's caused a lot of dissension, once again, among families, among friends, among professional colleagues. And the question is where do we go from here after the election, regardless of who wins?
877-217-5757 for Dan Moldea, who's reporting through the years, disrupted the careers of David Vitter, Bob Livingston, and Newt Gingrich. And in all three of those cases, it was extramarital sex, some more sordid than others. But basically, they went to the sidelines after reporting by Mr. Moldea. And think about Trump, who almost certainly, based on evidence presented in a court, had sex with a porn star while he was married. The rules are different from him, and when I was previewing the show today, he gets away with, if you want to use that term, gets away with things that other politicians would not. How so?
He gets away with, as your former governor, Edward Edwards, would say, he could get away with not just shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue and without losing a vote, but he gets away with what Edwin Edwards would say, being caught with a dead girl or a live boy. It's unbelievable what this guy has gotten away with, and I remember when Fox News, the whorehouse of American journalism, and the Republicans went out of their minds when Nancy Pelosi went to get her hair done without wearing a mask. And considering what this guy has been charged with, the civil cases that he's lost, not to mention the 34-count felony conviction, the criminal conviction in New York State, for which he is about to be sentenced on November 26. And I do believe that the judge in that case is going to is going to sentence him to some degree of detention after that conviction, that conviction by a jury of his peers. And I find it amazing that he is continuing to stand and continuing to survive. It's just incredible. He's the luckiest guy who's ever walked the earth, I think, in many ways.
Rebel in Sherwood, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dan Moldea. Hi, Rebel.
Hi, thank you so much, Jim, and thank you, Dan, for all your words there. I have two questions for you, Dan. First, is this probably the worst or the greatest failure of American journalism in history, considering they treat Trump like a regular candidate? And secondly, what do you think of General Milley's statement about in Bob Woodward's book about Trump being a fascist to the core?
All right. By the way, I think the media have reported about Trump's foibles, but anyway, go ahead, Dan.
I think that, you know, excellent questions both. The first, the Milley question, you know, Milley has said that, in fact, I quoted him yesterday, and he told Bob Woodward that Trump was the most dangerous person in this country, adding that he is, quote, a fascist to the core. That's not some nutcase saying that. That is Mark Milley, whom Trump appointed as the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff. And now Mattis has come along, and he has corroborated what Milley said, that he agrees with it as well. And plus, there are, as you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of former Republican officials who worked under Trump who say he is both unfit and he is unable to serve as the president. And then when you consider Mike Pence, you know, there was nobody, Jim, and you know this probably as well as anybody, nobody was more loyal to Donald Trump than Mike Pence. He was his puppy dog. Mike Pence, to his own diminishment, would go along with Trump on things that he probably never would have ever gone along with on his own. And what happened? Mike Pence had a job to do up on Capitol Hill on January 6th. He did what the Constitution required him to do, and I am certainly no fan of Mike Pence, but he did what he had to do, and it ran afoul of what Donald Trump wanted him to do. He wanted him not to certify the election so that Trump could make a legal argument that he was still the president and that he had won the presidency because of a corrupted campaign or a corrupted election, and that as a result, Trump, after hearing that Pence was at risk because he had almost gotten Pence killed by the mob up on Capitol Hill, he was told by an aide, and as Bob Woodward pointed out in his book, as the gentleman just said, his reaction was to Mike Pence being at risk. The reaction was, so what?
Right.
That's how Trump rewards loyalty.
Okay, let's go. We've got some folks lined up ready to talk with Dan. Miriam in Mandeville. Miriam, you're on with Dan.
Hey, Dan, have you heard, and I'm just not being aware of this, that Donald Trump smells so bad?
All right, okay. Well, let's not go there. That would be stooping to a level that people are accusing Trump of doing, so let's not go there. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, good morning. I think Harris is going to win because I think her difference in the women vote is going to be bigger than Trump's advantage in the men's vote. But Dan and Jim, did y'all see the article about where Trump's campaign committee in Nevada and Arizona has falsified info about like how many doors they knocked on and stuff? And if so, give me your comments on that.
All right. I have not seen that, but the
is that a question about the ground game?
Yeah, the ground game. Harris has a better ground game. Trump, right. And getting back to what Rebel said, Trump does get loads of free media. There is no doubt he knows how to do it. And when he does these crazy things, of course the media are there. But your thoughts about the ground game, Dan?
Well, the Democrats have made this a priority, and this is not something new. They've been working on this for years, and I think the gentleman's right. I think the women vote is going to eclipse the men vote, and I think men should be voting with enthusiasm for Kamala Harris. I think that she has earned that right. I think she's run a hell of a campaign, especially since, you know, having this thrust upon her as it was before the Democratic convention. And I just, you know, I think the time is right for some new blood, for some change. And I think that the time is right and the stage is set for her victory.
But Trump, to show you how adept he and his handlers are, think of how brilliant that was as far as the amount of media coverage it received when he went to the McDonald's for 15 minutes.
He still says that Kamala Harris never worked at McDonald's during college.
That's what he says.
I'm under the impression that has been proven false.
Well, and Obama wasn't born in the United States either. He's never acknowledged otherwise when there's definitive proof.
Even when he's proven wrong, he refuses to back down, and then he doubles down, and then he repeats the same lies and smears.
We're going to spend another segment with Dan Moldea after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. We're spending a few more minutes with Dan Moldea, the intrepid reporter in the Beltway, predicting victory, big victory for Kamala Harris. He says she'll win the overall vote, 54-43%, and will get more than 300 electoral votes. And last time around, Joe Biden got 304, and that was with a few defections. But he won overwhelmingly in the Electoral College and in the overall vote. Although three states, if they'd gone the other way and they were close, if all three, we're talking about Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, if they'd gone all the way to Mr. Trump, he would have retained the presidency. We'll see what happens 15 days from now. Let's go to Gretchen in St. Francisville, and please be brief, callers, our loyal listeners, the most enlightened audience in radio, because our time is short. Gretchen, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Quick statement. Women don't want to take men's power away. They just want respect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Gretchen.
She's exactly right. God bless her. Yeah.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Dan. Good morning, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having my favorite guest on. Mr. Moldea, isn't it possible, you know, as president, Trump has a lot of power to levy or unlevy tariffs. If somebody wants to send Trump some money that goes into his back pocket, couldn't they purchase $1 million of Trump watches or Bibles? And that would go into Trump's back pocket, and no one would be the wiser. So is this just another Trump scheme to exploit the office of president for?
All right. What about Trump capitalizing from the presidency? Is that fair, Dan?
Well, you know, it would have to go to the Supreme Court. They could say, is this something that he would be doing in the course of the presidency? And it's the immunity that the U.S. Supreme Court has given him in this ridiculous decision that the Supremes have made that is so disconcerting. I mean, Trump is he's basically saying that he and he alone is all that stands between, you know, honest government and the abyss, and that there'll be a complete breakdown of the American electoral system, a total economic collapse, the wholesale corruption of the FBI and the DOJ, the Department of Justice, and he's even predicting a catastrophic nuclear war if he is not elected. And you know, when you look at the record, you know, as much criticism as the Biden administration has taken for the economy, which is the biggest issue, seems, along with immigration, Joe Biden and the administration have seemed to have brought it back considerably. I mean, unemployment is down, way down. The stock market has doubled since Trump left office. And you know, our foreign, you know, NATO has never been stronger, where Trump was trying to wittingly or unwittingly destroy NATO to the advantage of his puppeteer, Vladimir Putin. And, you know, I think the Democrats have a little bit failed to present the goodness that they have achieved in that in that, and especially pulling the country out of the pandemic after Trump had made a complete and total mess of it. And remember, and going back to Bob Woodward, this, the caller earlier, also David, hello to David, he's my favorite caller. But Trump told Bob Woodward on February 7, 2020, in a recorded conversation, that he confided that the virus was airborne. That was not even on anybody's radar screen at that time. And then he said the following month to Woodward, in also a recorded conversation, that he didn't want to create a panic. Well, he started diminishing people who were wearing masks for protection, and he started downplaying the pandemic, saying it would be over quickly. And here we are, you know, years later, and you know, a lot of, over a million people have been killed.
All right,
by
let's try
pandemic.
To get as many of the remaining callers in who've been very patient with Dan Moldea. Paul downtown. Paul, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, and I hope y'all have a great day. Look, I just think isn't it amazing that the Democrats have turned abortion totally about the woman, and they never talked about the child? Could you comment on that, please?
All right. I think they do talk about the child.
I do think they do, too. And I also think that they don't talk about the man and whatever responsibility a man has in the abortion decision and in the abortion consequences. Men get away from this thing for scot-free. If somebody passes a law saying a man has an equal responsibility with the woman for the consequences of the abortion, I think that you'll find a lot of these white guys in these state legislatures around the country, not to mention the guys here in Washington and Congress, changing their mind about what's going on. Men are walking away from this whole abortion issue scot-free. They should be held responsible. They should take charge of this, such as the women has, and I think that would make everybody look at the abortion issue in a completely different way.
And if you want to appeal about abortion, you can do that. But to say you've got to impose your will on a woman, I think the woman has more right to make that decision than her congressman or her president or members of the Supreme Court. And that's the major issue. But men right now are solidly for Trump, and women are solidly for Harris. If it were a gender election, we know who would win. But it's not, right. And we'll see who turns out on November 5th. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
I was calling to see if Dan had looked at the NBC website for the early voting, where the Democrats are killing it in Pennsylvania,
right.
Wisconsin,
right.
And, you know, on the swing states.
All right. Well, Democrats generally vote more early, so that doesn't necessarily mean that Democrats are going to win those states, but I would think
he has a very good point. He has a very good point. There is this site that's out there, which I think he cites correctly. And that is, it is showing the percentages of who is voting early. And the Democrats are outpacing the Republicans almost by a 2-to-1 margin. Correct me if I'm wrong, sir, because you've seen this. But it's a remarkable thermometer for what's happening right now. The other thing is, let me bring this in about this enemy within thing while we're just chatting here at the end. This enemy within thing is just horrible, where Trump has essentially said that he said on a Fox News program that if that the National Guard and even the U.S. military should be used against his political enemies. And people have said, oh, they're talking about rioters and stuff. That's not what he was talking about. He was talking about people like Adam Schiff, who's about to become a U.S. senator, hopefully. He was talking about Nancy Pelosi. He was talking about people who disagree with him politically, and that he would use not just the Department of Justice, but the U.S. military to go after these people who disagree with them. I mean, believe what this guy says. And he's saying that he is going to be unencumbered by any rules or laws, especially in the aftermath of this stupid Supreme Court decision giving the president immunity from any prosecution while he is supposedly in the line of duty.
Michael Breckenridge asks, why has the current administration, the Biden-Harris administration, allowed so many people, including those from Ukraine, by the way, to illegally enter our country, he writes, our country capitalized. The Ukrainian people are coming here uncontested, Dan, but others are entering, at least more than Michael Breckenridge and others like. Your thoughts?
The last time I had a job where I wasn't a writer was after I wrote my first book about Jimmy Hoffa, the rise and fall of Jimmy Hoffa, the Hoffa Wars in 1978, which was, you know, what, 46 years ago. And I had just burned out after that book. And so I took a job where I was offered the job as executive assistant to the deputy director of what was then the Action Peace Corps operation. It was the two volunteer agencies were merged, the domestic and the foreign. And basically, my job was to deal with refugees. And it was during the boat people period of time with the Vietnamese. Very fine people who were trying to come to this country. And the question was whether they are economic refugees or whether they are political refugees. And in the case of the boat people, because they were escaping oppression in Southeast Asia, they were viewed as political refugees, and they were put to the head of the list. I think that that needs to be a focus of what's going on, whether people are coming here for economic reasons or whether they're coming here for political oppression reasons. And again, the people who are being politically oppressed by these horrible dictatorships in Central America should go to the head of the list, and that should be the priority.
I got you. Well, and when, of course, what about the people in Haiti?
Haiti is working itself out in Springfield, Ohio. Trump has done nothing but ratchet that
there
up.
There you go. They're eating cats.
Talks about dogs and cats.
They're eating dogs.
Like
okay.
Eating dogs, eating cats.
Jake
eating
and cats. A-Meat. Jake and A-Meat, please be quick, Jake. You're on with Dan. Hi, Jake.
Sure. Hey, good morning. I want to know if President Trump wins the election, will Dan Moldea leave the country?
I think Dan's staying. He's staying.
But, he's a roughhouser.
He's in a city that has taxation without representation, right?
Taxation without representation.
Washington, D.C.
Yes. Well done, Jim. Yes,
All right.
All right. Taxation without representation.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you'll be our final caller for Dan. Phil, please be brief. You're on.
What do you think of the Western media's treatment of the genocide that's going on in Gaza?
All right. Well, has the Western media dropped the ball? Have the Western media dropped the ball on this?
That's a tough one.
That's like
all
an all-day show.
All I can say is I think you could be pro-Israel without being pro-Netanyahu, and that's sort of my feeling about this. I believe what the Biden administration – I think the Biden administration has done everything they can possibly do to make this situation work out. I give great credit to Biden and his team for what they've tried to do over there, even though it's been a disaster in many ways, but I think disaster is more at the feet of Netanyahu than it is to anything else.
All right. Let's call it a day with Dan. We'll be calling again soon. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
Back with Ronnie Harris. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ronnie Harris is in the house. He now calls Baton Rouge home. Born in New Orleans. 28 years. 7 terms. Mayor of Gretna, obviously elected as a young man, and he is here to talk about a few matters, and he is a great student and observer of American and Louisiana politics. And your number is 877-217-5757. Last time you were on, a listener said, where did this guy go to high school? Where did you go to high school?
Graduated from Archbishop Shaw in Marrero.
I'll be darned. One of the great schools.
Absolutely.
You were a few years ahead of John Forcade, right?
Yes, I was. I graduated before he came on the scene, but he was our guest of honor for a parade in Gretna after his NFL debut.
He was a competitor, number one at Ole Miss and LSU. I was told, don't have any proof, but if you saw the game, there was once a bounty on him to see who could deliver the most vicious hit on John Forcade, who opted to go to Ole Miss rather than come to LSU. Probably was the reason why Charlie McClendon lost his gig, because he was the top recruit in the country. He was something, as was Ronnie Harris.
Yeah.
And 28 years mayor of Gretna. And you've been studying the ballot, and you say that there's some questions about what's going on, particularly in the presidential election, on the Louisiana ballot. Do we have an illegal ballot, perhaps?
No, it's very legal because I called the Secretary of State's office. Jim, I like to research the ballot. I like to do my homework because I wonder about some people who run for office and really may not have a chance of winning, but yet they're there. And I'm glad that they do because election procedure is just an amazing thing to happen in one's life. But last week you were speaking with James Carville about Jill Stein. And one of the things that I noticed on the ballot was that Jill Stein on the Louisiana ballot is running with Jamu Baraka as her vice president candidate. And when I went to the website to look at the Green Party, I couldn't find his name on anything. But there was a thing said, meet Butch. Butch, Butch who? Well, to find out, in other states, such as the state of Mississippi, because I saw their ballot, Rudolph Ware is the vice presidential candidate.
For Jill Stein.
For Jill Stein.
So you can have different candidates in different states?
Evidently. And really? And it just seems to me it's almost like a bait and switch type of deal. Vote for Jill, but you may get a different type of vice president. I don't know how it works.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Yes. I called the Secretary of State's office, and they said, look, they qualify. They give us the names. We put on the ballot. That's all we do. Which I understand. That's
there
how it
be
works.
A challenge, though. It's kind of like somebody can run for office, like some 28-year-old could get elected president, but he or she couldn't serve if they won.
Because, well, correct.
Because
yeah,
they have to be 35. And yeah, yes. We had Nancy Landry on last week. She's an impressive person. I think she's doing what the law allows. Obviously, Jill Stein would have some real issues if she were to pull this one out.
Well, I went to the candidate inquiry. There's a phone number. And I called it, and the gentleman who answered it really didn't want to speak to me. And he says, call later. And I've called four times as early as about 15 minutes ago. And the voicemail is full. They won't take the call because I wanted to ask the campaign, as directed by the Secretary of State, call the campaign and ask what's the deal. And when I was in Natchez this past weekend looking at their balloon festival, I also looked at their newspaper and the ballot, and there was Rudolph Ware. And his bio is one that he's a professor and he's in a number of liberal arts types of subject matter. But I found it extremely interesting and troubling at the same time.
Well,
why isn't the same ballot on every state?
I would
state?
Think that maybe there would be a challenge. And if that were the case, it's too late to get Jill Stein off the ballot. But if her votes didn't count, as Carville pointed out, Hillary Clinton would have won Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania without the votes for Jill Stein.
If they didn't count?
If they didn't count.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
So somebody
yeah.
could make a challenge on this and get her off the ballot, and she is on the ballot in all of those states.
Well,
so Ronnie Harris, yeah. you may be onto something that the people who are supportive of Kamala Harris should
would,
look at.
Investigative journalism is not my bag, but I would like
knows. I think you've done it, and quite often, quote, investigative journalists, they get their information from other sources, and they get it in a variety of ways. Sometimes it's not somebody who has a bone to pick. It's just somebody who has information.
Well, they heard it first here on the Inkster Show.
You've got great information. Well, segueing to another topic, and I'll get into the Veterans Vehicle, Military Vehicle Preservation Association, but you were researching Jefferson Highway, which, as you note, goes all the way from New Orleans to
Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And when I ask people in Baton Rouge, because I ask them all, and I just enjoy asking that question because, well, you know, it runs from Government Street to Airline Highway. No, it goes to the Ascension Parish line. And it does. But the historic Jefferson Highway, which began in a meeting in New Orleans in November of 1915, the cardinal points were selected that it would be in New Orleans, starting at St. Charles and Common Street, and progress to Baton Rouge, Alexandria, Natchitoches, Shreveport, and exit Louisiana near Greenville.
So Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And it's the Pines to Palms Highway. And in conjunction with that, we're segueing to the Military Vehicle Preservation Association. How does that associate with the historic Jefferson Highway?
In other states, Iowa, for example, they have recognized the historic Jefferson Highway as a historic route in their state. I'd love to see the same thing happen in Louisiana. But other states are taking a commanding lead, and I want to see where Louisiana gets recognized for their contribution to the historic first international transcontinental highway, paved, improved highway mm-hmm. in the United States. And on October 1st, the Military Vehicle Preservation Association, a convoy, it started out with 34 World War II and Korean War era vintage automobiles traveling from Canadian border in Minnesota to New Orleans. And on October the 28th, they will be parading.
A week from today. One week from today, they will be 34 vehicles, right?
That's correct. And what people don't know is that the Jefferson Highway crossed the Mississippi River from Port Allen into Baton Rouge at the Ferry Street Landing. And Government Street was part of the Jefferson Highway. So this convoy of vehicles, military vehicles, will be going down the streets of Government Street and Jefferson Highway on Monday. It's going to begin at 8 o'clock. They're going to cross the UEP Long Bridge, go down Scenic, stop at the State Capitol, hopefully for a photo op, and then travel Government Street and Jefferson Highway. Their top speed is 40 miles an hour. And everybody loves a parade. And when they see that these folks are coming from all different states and that their love is to preserve military vehicles, I think it'll be very interesting for the Baton Rouge community. I'd like to see people come out, give them a wave, and give them a Baton Rouge welcome.
Yeah, so that's next Monday, the 28th, a 34-vehicle convoy of World War II and Korea War era vehicles. They'll be traveling in our parish, East Baton Rouge, on Scenic Highway with a stop at the state capitol, then I think the plan, if you can pull it off, is to get them down Government Street and continue to Ascension Parish on the historic Jefferson Highway. Do we have an approximate time this will happen?
I would tend to think that by the state capitol will be about 8:30. I want to give a shout out to the city of Baton Rouge Police Department, who will be providing an escort through the entire parish. I want to say thank you, Chief Morse, because with that, it would be very difficult to have a slow moving convoy coming through. But I think people will find it very interesting.
What kind of vehicles?
Jeeps, half track, 2-ton. Units. If people go to the Jefferson Highway Association Facebook page, they can see the various news media reports. In Muskogee, Oklahoma, they had a car show that was attached to it, and they paraded. In Natchitoches, they're going to be in the homecoming parade. Actually, I guess that
happened. Northwestern?
Yes. And that as part of the homecoming activities. So it's really kind of coming together, but I'd like the awareness of Jefferson Highway be promoted in Louisiana. And I have a quick story.
Yes.
I'm from Gretna, and I'm partial to my hometown. And it's as the crow flies just a couple miles from the beginning of Jefferson Highway. When I was working with I-49 South Task Force, someone told me about the Pines to Palms Highway, but they never associated it with Jefferson Parish. If you take I-49 north to Kansas City, take I-29 north to Winnipeg, and as you cross the Canadian border, take a first left turn and go 13 miles, and you go to Gretna, Manitoba, Canada. So I favored the Gretna to Gretna Superhighway.
This is great stuff. And a listener says, what was the most popular car of the 1950s? And I didn't know this, but I've got a phone. It was a Chevrolet Bel Air. Its sleek design, chrome features, tail fins, and two-tone paint jobs made it a symbol of the 1950s. Will there be a Bel Air in the bunch?
I have no idea.
Maybe Ronnie will be driving a Bel Air. Bill downtown. Bill, you're on with Ronnie Harris. Good morning.
You know, Jefferson Highway is fascinating. If you go to the corner of Common and St. Charles, there's a little monument there on the corner across from the trolley stop that is the start of the Jefferson Highway. It goes all the way to Winnipeg, Canada, and it's over 100 years old now. In fact, you know, the U.S. highway system is just right at 100 years coming up this year or next, I think.
Prior to the National Highway System, there was numerous named highways throughout the United States. No highway signs. But what was interesting to know that you're on Jefferson Highway, you would see a logo painted on a utility pole. Blue stripes at the top and bottom, a white background, and a J with a little line and another line. It was JH, a very unique logo. But they had literally, I would say, over 100 types of different named highways throughout the United States. The Lincoln Highway, the Pikes Peak Ocean to Ocean Highway. and Jefferson Highway can be right there with them.
Next week, 8:30, State Capitol. Be there with Ronnie Harris. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.